He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
This is Media Watch. I'm Colin Peacock. The future of TV news and current affairs is still in the balance after news of planned cuts at TVNZ News, and the complete closure of News Hub is on the table too. The Prime Minister says the media just have to innovate to survive. We ask one editor who has. Does that work? But first, controversial comments on co-governance and pinching an English punk band's pop hit earned the media's biggest critic in politics a week's worth of headlines. And it also dragged the focus away from stuff of substance.
Well, Dame Kiri Te Kanawa's illustrious career has been recognised by Parliament with heartfelt speeches, waiata, and even a couple of job offers. The opera singer celebrated her 80th birthday this month. Jemima Houston was at Parliament and filed this report.
That was Dame Kiri in Parliament last Wednesday, in fact singing for the first time in public anywhere for years, as reported on RNZ's Morning Report last Wednesday. And among the politicians hailing her achievements, the Culture and Heritage Minister, Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that this House recognise the achievements and career of Dame Kiri Te Kanawa and congratulate her as she celebrates her 80th birthday.
And there was no objection to that from politicians of all stripes. But that day, the Parliamentary Press Gallery was much more interested in music of a different kind. This was Morning Report 1 hour earlier on Wednesday.
I thought that music mattered, but does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter.
That, of course, is the song Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba. The band's lead vocalist, Dustin Bruce, has spoken to the BBC about his objections to Winston Peters using their music.
Everything he stands for is against everything that's that song.
And what about the freedom to use your music? I mean, some people might say, well, isn't it flattering that somebody's using your music, even if you don't agree? We don't all agree with each other.
People don't realise the history of the band or what the band are actually trying to say with that song.
But it wasn't as if Winston Peters or his party had actually ripped off the music to record their own version for pecuniary purposes. They merely played it as walk-on music for his State of the Nation speech in Palmerston North last weekend. Now, in most circumstances, the media can't use copyrighted music without paying for it, and politicians need permission to use it as part of any performance as well. And that's something the National Party found out to their cost when they played an Eminem sound-alike soundtrack in election advertising and rallies back in 2011. On Wednesday, the New Zealand Herald said that use of Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping in Palmerston North has been referred to the Australasian authorities by Sony Music Publishing, so watch the space. But how was it that in 2024, a politician who entered Parliament in 1979 ended up in hot water with an anarcho-punk band formed in the UK in 1982 for a hit song of theirs recorded in 1997? Well, that was because journalists here asked them for an opinion, prompting a cranky statement from the Right Honourable Winston Peters, which said the story had been initiated by what he called a lefty shill reporter acting proactively to concoct a story. But which reporter? On Newstalk ZB's Drive show on Tuesday, the host Heather Duplessy-Allen and guest panellist Jordan Williams of the Taxpayers Union asked fellow panellist Toby Manhire, an editor at the spin-off.
Was it the spin-off that reached out to them?
Or was it Stuff, Toby?
Both. I think it happened simultaneously because we published and then Tobe O'Brien of Stuff.co.nz had a piece that came out sort of 10 minutes afterwards, like too soon for it not to be.
You could be right that it's a sort of a win-win. It's a cheap story for the media and it arguably helps. Do you not think, though, that it simply furthers the sort of the cultural law or a partisan divide?
The next day, Winston Peters appeared on TVNZ's breakfast show claiming that he was the victim of journalists making trouble and what he called 24 hours of lies.
All the way down in Palmerston North last Sunday was reaching all the way to Liverpool, but some lefty shill who doesn't like some honesty about racism and how negatively bad it is for our country decided to call them and, like you, misinform the poor band that had been disbanded all those years ago and try and make something of it. You're not going to succeed, so don't waste my time or your viewers' time.
And Winston Peters repeated that insult, shill, so much that TVNZ decided it needed an online explainer for the audience, which it published soon after. Now, Winston Peters mixed up Liverpool with Leeds there, and TVNZ misspelled Chumbawamba, but Winston Peters went on to accuse the media of misinforming not only the band, but the Prime Minister and the public about what he'd actually said in his controversial State of the Nation speech.
Now, look, all I want from the New Zealand media, paid for by the taxpayer, is some unbiased neutrality and honesty.
We are all paid by the taxpayer, Mr. Peters, you and I both.
And that was a bit of a weird response there from the breakfast host, Anna Burns-Francis. TVNZ pays her from the commercial revenue it attracts and not from the public purse. But anyhow, the co-opting of a pop hit from 1997 was not really the main angle of Winston Peters' speech for the media. This was...
Tonight on One News, Winston Peters now says his Nazi Germany comments have been misrepresented as he dismisses questions he's been given a telling off by the Prime Minister.
Right, you stop lying.
Mate, have you been asked to pull your head in, Mr. Peters?
That was Tuesday night's TVNZ One News at 6. Now, by this time, Winston Peters had told the media categorically that the reason he referred to Nazi Germany in the first place was a suggestion that Māori had superior DNA, which was briefly posted on Te Pāti Māori's website recently and then repeated by party co-leader Rāwiri Waititi. Now, that connection wasn't explicit in his speech or linked to in his comments about the risks of co-governance, but Mr. Peters claimed he'd never mentioned the Holocaust or genocide in his speech either, yet the media, unfairly, he said, used both words. And Jordan Williams from the Taxpayers' Union said so as well on News Talk ZB.
That he's saying co-governance is Nazism. I was walking the dog last night and a senior criminal barrister, who's a neighbour of mine, I ran into, and he just watched News Hub and pointed out the selective editing to make it look like Winston Peters was saying co-governance is out of the Nazi playbook.
But as News Hub political editor Jenna Lynch pointed out on Tuesday, Winston Peters himself had made the link when he was asked to clarify his comments in a media conference after his speech.
Peters made the comments during a section of his speech labelled Labour government failures.
And the insidious creep of racist co-governance.
The Nazi comments came just after that.
You compared Labour's approach to co-governance to Nazi Germany. Is that appropriate?
Yes, it is.
Why?
Because that's what it's based on. It's based on racial preference, based on somebody being superior.
Pretty hard to blame the media for selectivity there. Back on News Talk ZB, Toby Manhire of The Spin-Off described the Chumbawamba affair in media terms this way.
It's a bit of a win-win in that the politician in question gets a bit of extra attention. Yeah. The band in question, maybe a band that you haven't heard of for some time, gets a bit of extra attention and, you know, on we go.
But his fellow panellist Jordan Williams disagreed.
Because that's exactly what the media are doing, setting up a straw man where both sides win, but actually the public lose. And unironically, the media wonder why the trust is declining. Here is case and point of it.
Well, it's at best arguable that journalists clarifying comments condemned as troubling and even extreme could have that impact. But it certainly was true that the public do lose out from the focus on such political sideshows. In her weekly politics newsletter, the Veteran Herald political correspondent Audrey Young said, forget the Nazi Germany Ferrari. Winston Peters had opened his speech saying there was a $5.6 billion fiscal hole in the government's plans. And she said that undermining a finance minister like that is unheard of. And
the fact that Peters claimed that his was the only party to have alerted the public before the election to how bad things could get is laughable. The entire election campaign was centred on the economy and the credibility of National's fiscal plan. It dominated media coverage throughout the campaign.
And this week the media were doing the heavy lifting on that as well. That $5.6 billion figure came from a Sunday Star Times column by Vernon Small, and the Herald's deputy political editor Thomas Coughlin came up with a $3.3 billion gap over the government's four-year forecast period. And that left out the government's roading plan, estimated to cost billions more than the National Party had budgeted for over a longer period. A newsroom analysis by political reporter Mark Dalder concluded the government's tax package now needs an extra $1.5 billion to break even. But all this received less media attention than the fallout from Winston Peters' speech. Likewise, the sudden changes of rules for disability support allowances on Tuesday and the rapid U-turn on Wednesday restoring some, but not all, of those restrictions. Or the U-turn on road user charges for electric vehicles made on Monday. Now, in the end, the public do lose out from the lack of focus on all of that, though there was one other loser from the whole episode as well, at least for those whose opinions are shaped by Newstalk ZB's Mike Hosking Breakfast. And that's the main metropolis of the Manawatū, like this.
Having Peters as a breath of fresh air after the last 4 years, you see, this is my whole point. Get him in a straight, get him on the straight and narrow. He's actually quite a good operator. It's just when he goes off piste on the weekend in Palmerston North. I think it was Palmerston North. He shouldn't have ever gone there. People go, why was he in Palmerston North? No one answered that question.
Wow, it's beautiful, isn't it?
It's 9 away from 8.
On this week's Midweek Media Watch, last Wednesday here on RNZ National, Hayden Donnell looked at the challenge for the media in reporting Winston Peters appropriately and the unique codependence that seems to come to light when he sounds off about co-governance or any other hot-button issue. And this week, Hayden also looked at hot mics and the rights and wrongs of airing politicians' inadvertent blurts when they don't know they're being recorded.
Oh, yeah. Classic tabloid stuff from stuff. Good on you.
If you missed it, Midweek Media Watch is on the Media Watch page of the RNZ website, our section of the RNZ app, or it's available for free wherever you get your podcasts. And last Wednesday, Hayden also spoke about the life and legacy of Rod Oram, because that was also the day the sad news of his death was announced after a heart attack out cycling last Sunday. Rod came from the UK to head up the Herald's business coverage 45 years ago, and in recent years, as an independent journalist and commentator, he dedicated himself to coverage of sustainability in business and in agriculture, and how to adapt to and better understand climate change. And to that end, he made his own way, and often at his own expense, to the global COP, or Conference of the Parties summits, to assess the progress in dealing with climate change worldwide. And that was a commitment that none of our mainstream media companies was prepared to make. Now, while Rod was there in Egypt for COP27 in 2022, for example, he appeared on Newstalk ZB and told the presenter Heather Duplessis-Allen that she was wrong to claim New Zealand was in the leading pack of countries responding to climate change.
We're progressing really fast on things that are very important to us, like farming and agriculture. And then you look across the world and it's just, it's hit a wall. And it's really hard to get people on board here, isn't it?
Heather, New Zealand is a laggard. We've got all the structure in place, you know, Zero Carbon Act, Climate Change Commission, everything else. We're not reducing emissions. There are countries that are reducing emissions far, far faster than
But are they the important countries, Rod?
Yes, they are. The US is going to hit its targets of emissions reductions by 2030. The EU has increased its goal for 2030. So, no, seriously, Heather, we are going backwards in New Zealand. I want to make that completely clear.
Rod Oram there in 2022, firmly, but with typical politeness and sincerity, pointing out that we all need to come to terms with the realities that affect us all, and what we think we know isn't always right. Now, from time to time, Rod also appeared on this program when we looked at coverage of sustainability or climate change reporting. He was always willing to help and unfailingly polite, even at his busiest times. So, along with many others expressing their sadness and honouring his lifetime's work this past week, we too will miss him here at Media Watch. While the fallout from that State of the Nation speech by the Deputy Prime Minister preoccupied political coverage earlier this past week, the Broadcasting Minister's muted response to proposed cuts at TVNZ News and the planned closure of NewsHub was also on the radar for TVNZ's political reporter, Benedict Collins.
The Prime Minister's team has also advised the Media and Communications Minister to limit her communication with the media.
Are you struggling in your portfolio?
No. I have agreed to do 2 interviews that I have actually cancelled, yes.
Weekend, one of those interviews, agreed to and cancelled on the same day, was with Media Watch. Well, this week, Melissa Lee told RNZ she feared that would have been a bit boring anyway because she couldn't say a whole lot while making plans for media policy to take the cabinet. Now, previously, the minister had said that commercial TV broadcasters' current crisis has been some time in the making, and at his post-cabinet media conference last week, the Prime Minister said this.
It requires lots of innovation, and media companies will need to innovate just like every other company does in every other sector that's gone through tough and challenging and structural challenges.
And that's a response that's hard to hear for executives of media companies. Innovating and following the audience really means going digital and online these days, where most news is free. And unless you can get enough supporters or subscribers to pay up, that means trying to get digital advertising, and the vast bulk of revenue from that goes offshore to the companies that have cornered a market, which media companies say is simply not a level playing field. Peter Newport is a former news reporter and producer at TVNZ, the former TV3, and also RNZ, who has innovated online. In Queenstown, he set up Crux, an online-only news service covering the Southern Lakes region. It carries news and information updated daily with advertising and some public money from New Zealand On Air for staffing and video productions. Now, the last time we spoke to him here on Media Watch last year, he was promoting a plan to get businesses and the government to back a nationwide but regional network of similar news sites, the Regional News Network, or RNN. Even before the commercial crisis of our news media deepened drastically this month, that seemed like a very long shot. So this week I asked Peter Newport what the prospects are for that, but first I asked, what did he make of politicians saying that the answer for our stricken news media is simply innovation?
So we need to sort out something and sort it out fast. It needs to be dramatic and real. This argument can't be dominated by profit. It has to be dominated by public interest journalism and how it's funded. I've worked in television news more than I've worked in any other branch of journalism. I think we have to accept that linear viewing, if it's not dead, needs to be dead because in New Zealand we can't afford it. You know, we've had 20 years to get used to technology. I mean, the way that you can time shift one news now makes it so easy. It's virtually on demand. It doesn't need to be seen as a broadcast product. We can make fantastic video packages as well as great traditional written stories for a tiny fraction of what the traditional broadcast news people spend. I don't want to see journalists editing or shooting. I think we still need, if not a camera crew, we need videographers.
But if you say put linear television to bed, are you saying just forget about the whole idea of trying to screen real-time, hour-long, in the hope of filling it enough with enough Harvey Norman or Noel Leeming
ads? Forget it. And what we do instead is we produce quality news across audio, video, and I'm including slick edited packages.
But if you're a national broadcaster, why would you do that? If you still have an audience, even if it's a kind of rump or ageing audience, whatever, that is hundreds of thousands strong at 6 p.m. and in some cases staying right on till 7:30 to watch a current affairs show or something similar. Advertisers, even if they're paying less, attracting less eyeballs, are still doing it. Why would you switch that off?
Well, I'm saying make the packages. You don't need the $30,000 cameras. You don't need the transmitters. I think, you know, there's no need, given the internet is now relatively universal, there's no need for the terrestrial transmission anymore. Put them online as soon as they're ready. Don't make people wait until 6 o'clock. But then you can still monetize that, Colin, at 6 o'clock by having a platform that has all the stories there. And you either watch them in a sequence, in a stack or in a queue, or you can pick and choose. That's the modern way to do it. But employ professionals, use videographers, have decent audio, but edit it quickly, get it online immediately. Don't save it till 6 o'clock. You've actually got more advertising opportunities there because you can insert shorter ads more frequently into that on-demand model. You can have a special platform which would mimic the 6 o'clock news for a 20th of the cost. A modern journalist, and there'll be fewer of us...
But they're already all doing that, aren't they? So RNZ, TVNZ, NewsHub itself, NewsHub's not on the radio, but they're all operating online. Yes. They're all putting their video there.
So let's get rid of these demarcations because it's not economic. And we need to educate the audience that it's going to be delivered differently.
When the Prime Minister was asked for a response, you know, his initial response was, look, it's difficult, but the advertising thing isn't working out. And he says media have to innovate. And this will be annoying for media who feel
they have gone online. They've put their content and on the platforms that, you know, they now say are making all the money, the likes of Google Search, Facebook, whatever. You know, the media could turn this around on the government and say, look, governments haven't innovated. You set up a structure 30 years ago with Commercial Television New Zealand, a non-commercial RNZ, and you've got New Zealand on air, and it's the government that oversees all of that.
No, I think you're dead right. I think we all need to start to treat this like an earthquake. You know, it's a civic emergency. We need our media. Even the politicians need media. It's part of keeping this brilliant country together.
So what sort of thinking then do we need from the government and not just the broadcasting minister? I mean, as I say, this is someone I know that you're talking to them because you've got a project you want to see up and running, and of course one that already is in Crux in your Southern Lakes area.
Well, basically, I think the government can get involved because they wouldn't say Cyclone Gabriel isn't their problem, and they wouldn't say an earthquake in Christchurch isn't their problem. This is their problem. It's also the problem of the news media. So we need to put aside this them and us thing and start to figure out what we find as a solution. Now, the path should be towards sustainability. We need to push back against misinformation. On Crux, I left up our comments section when News Hub went down. Every single comment said, I'll contribute to the cost of burying these journalists. It was that nasty. And there were 30, 40, 50 of them. That's how serious the problem is. We can only fix it by working with government and with Google and Meta to get it fixed. Everybody has their own agenda, but if we can make journalism the focus, not commercial success, and start also to put aside this question of government money equaling influence towards anybody.
Even leaving that aside, though, I mean, every government, National, Labour, whatever, the amount of money that they've both agreed to put into media through New Zealand On Air, funding RNZ, Whakaata Māori, Te Māngai Pāho, all those agencies, put it all together, it's swelled to way more than $250 million a year. So if the companies that are screening the content that they're funding are struggling, and we're seeing even the biggest one in television, TVNZ, is having to lose 10% of its staff, the end point of this money we put in, are struggling to either make money or pull an audience.
They must be smaller and more agile. Hundreds of people are going to lose their jobs. But we have to think about this almost in the Noah's Ark sense, that we have to rescue the essence of journalism is the first step. Then I think we can grow, but we have to survive first. We're not going to grow if we don't survive. And proving these principles, we've been through these principles in great detail and they work. I think the big guys are going to see terrible consequences from the current crunch. But the green shoot, Colin, is that there's still plenty of money in a distressed advertising market. Today FM was put out of business because their revenue was only $6 million and then it needed $7 million to break even. The audience for Today FM was smaller than Crux at 40,000. I mean, for God's sake, $6 million to run a radio station? We've got to start to think that it costs $600,000 to run a radio station. Everything needs to be trimmed. The old days have gone. They've been kept alive artificially. Ad agencies and that legacy rebate commission system has kept the wrong type of advertising alive for too long. But first of all, let's make sure journalism survives, but under a completely new agile model.
Well, it's some time, Peter, since we last spoke to you. Then the RNN Regional News Network was a bold idea. You were seeking expressions of interest for people that wanted to be involved, both as financial partners, sponsors, backers, whatever, and the journalists to staff this. Very ambitious plan, but it all seems to have gone quiet, not much on the website. What's happening now with that?
Where we've got to is we actually were fortunate enough to meet Minister Melissa Lee. Minister Lee has been very supportive. She thinks that our regional news network idea is the right thing at the right time. In the regions, at least, news is so important that it's not just about journalism. It's actually about social cohesion and economic development. And, of course, the minister is the Minister for Economic Development as well as media. We might be looking at some type of support that will get us going from a regional development point of view. But private investors do not want to have anything to do with news. Let's be super clear about that.
This is very different, though, isn't it, Peter, to what you were proposing when you first launched the idea? Because yourself and Tim Martin, your head of business. He's now not part of the project anymore, I gather. But, you know, you were saying, look, this is going to be something that companies would want to get behind. You know, the regions are the heartbeat of the economy. That was the plan then. So no interest at all from commercial companies?
No, and we got that wrong. And I think it was a classic example of letting logic get in the way of a good plan. What that we discovered from private investors is that news is toxic. You know, nobody is touching news. But there is appetite there from the government to find some way to support genuine innovation. That's what this is. We also have accelerated interest from Google and Meta, who both believe that the networking of hyperlocal sites, and I should emphasize that's what we're doing. We're not competing with NZME or Stuff. This is content for very small and medium communities. It's right down to the grassroots, but it can be networked. And the proof of that is that Crux has grown so much that our audience is way bigger than the district we cover.
You're talking about growth in terms of people engaging with it online, right? Audience growth.
Audience in every metric. Just to give you some very brief details, we serve an audience in Queenstown, Cromwell and Wanaka that is about 50,000 people. In February, our users, our unique users, were over 130,000. We had over 300,000 page views. The average time on that page is up to 2 minutes long. And on Facebook, we're reaching 500,000 people with engagement at 170,000. Okay, so those are all dry numbers, but what they mean is that we should be making a fortune in terms of advertising, but we're not.
Because the revenue doesn't come to the creators, the content, as we've heard so much about lately, it goes to the platforms, right? So this project of yours now does very much depend on the government backing it.
It could be a number of agencies. It could even be the Regional Development Fund. That's really up to the officials who are now actively talking about it with some urgency given the collapse of News Hub.
That was Peter Newport, formerly a journalist at TVNZ, TV3 and RNZ, and now the managing editor at the Queenstown-based online news outlet Crux since 2018. For the past year, he's been seeking government and media industry support for a proposal called Regional News Network, a network of 17 similar local online news sites around the country outside the main centres. And as you heard there, he recently met with the Minister of Broadcasting and government officials to discuss backing for that idea. And finally on Media Watch this weekend, earlier we heard how Winston Peters reckons that he and his party are victims of journalists' personal opinions influencing their reporting of politics. And News Talk ZB's veteran political commentator Barry Soper is one who doesn't hold back with his own opinions, and neither does his partner on the same network and his partner in life, Heather Duplessy-Allen. Their opinions flow freely when they talk to each other about politics every weekday afternoon on her Drive show. And back on the 4th of August last year, she told Barry Soper this.
Oh, Barry, your ongoing love affair with Winston drives me nuts.
No, it's not a no.
But while Barry Soper denied that, he wasn't keen on others.
Well, Te Pāti Māori are so loony that
Some would think Winston is too.
You know, some would think Labour is, some would think National is, some would think the ACT Party is.
So it's about Barry Soper's personal preference.
No, it's not at all. I mean,
and Barry Soper doubled down that day on what he called loony policy like this.
If you look at some of the impossible policies that are being promoted by the Māori Party,
Yeah. You'd
have to say, you'd have to be on the spectrum to go out there and vote for them.
Yeah.
And it's similar to the Green Party. I mean, you know, the wealth tax proposal.
And having told Heather Duplessy-Allen it wasn't simply a matter of his personal opinions, Barry Soper then made it clear it really was.
I seem to have little preference, of course, for the Māori Party because many of their policies are blatantly racist, and I don't think racism has a place in this country. Many of the policies of the Greens are loony, and that's why it would be called the Coalition of Chaos on the left by the National Party, that is. But, you know, if you're going to have a squabble between who's going to form friendships with the National Party after the election, let the voter decide that.
And when the voters did decide 3 months later, about one voter in seven actually did vote for the two parties that Barry Soper thought had, in his words, loony policy, or that you'd have to be on the spectrum to back. Predictably, there was a formal complaint about that broadcast later, citing the discrimination and denigration standard of the Code of Broadcasting Standards. Now, there is a very high bar for upholding complaints under that standard, and the last broadcaster to fall foul of it was back in 2019, and it was Newstalk ZB's Heather Duplessy-Allen, when she declared the Pacific Islands are leeches on us, and then doubled down on that the next day when she was criticised for it.
Take this one, John Edwards. I will double down on this. I do not regret what I said, because I was not talking about people living in this country or the people themselves. I'm talking about the Pacific Islands and the people who run it.
In the case of Barry Soper's comments last August, the complainant said he'd used bigoted and discriminatory language against one of the most marginalised groups in New Zealand society, those with autism spectrum disorder. But the BSA can only uphold a complaint where the broadcaster has caused actual or potential harm at a level that outweighs the right to freedom of expression. And broadcasters often argue that the risk of chilling their freedom of expression must be paramount. But in this case, Barry Soper's employers, NZME Radio, upheld the complaint itself as a breach of the standard. It said that Barry Soper's comments were made off the cuff without fully considering the potential impact, but
the comment could have the effect of reinforcing harmful stereotypes or stigma faced by this section or sections of the community.
NZME also told the Broadcasting Standards Authority that Barry Soper and Heather Duplessy-Allen had both been given feedback and counselled on fully considering the potential offence and impact of such comments. Now, the complainant in this case was not satisfied, but the authority said that the comment didn't contain any direct malice or nastiness towards people with autism, and it was made as part of a serious political commentary. And the fact that NZME acknowledged the potential harm and had counselled the relevant staff to avoid similar conduct was, they said, sufficient. And it also noted that NZME's chief radio officer was also made aware of the outcome of the complaint. And he's now in the unique situation of having two of the very few broadcasters ever sanctioned for breaching the standard for denigration and discrimination as a married couple on air most weekdays, airing their political opinions to each other. Well, that's all we have for you on Media Watch this weekend, but we'll be back again with more on the media in midweek Media Watch next Wednesday after 9:30 on Nights with Emile Donovan. And then back again with Media Watch at the same time next weekend here on RNZ National.